Yeah. And then I suppose after that, you know, the years rolled on, and then you came up to the emergency, and
yes,
and that was a time of great change because embargo.
Indeed, yeah.
Did that affect the business?
Yeah, well, they found it hard to get raw materials, you know, but they survived. But in fact, in a way, it was kind of immediately after the war. And Gordon Lambert, who was one of the most important people in the management in the late 20th century, told me this, that, again, it's kind of general knowledge anyway, that the Irish government at the time took a line whereby they placed restrictions on the export of all Irish food produce, because they felt that our country needed feeding first. But Gordon Lambert pointed out that in Britain at the same time, and they had much more hardship food-wise than we had. I mean, Britain was starving. They had rationing up to mid-1950s, I think. They were much worse off than we were food-wise. They didn't ever place an embargo on food produce being exported from Britain. Mm-hmm. But the upshot of it was that Jacobs in Dublin, who were exporting all over the English-speaking world, you know, to Australia, to Canada, to the United States, to, you name, New Zealand, they had huge exports, lost all of that because the Irish government said, sorry, you can't export anymore. And it was transferred to Jacobs Liverpool. They had opened a new factory in Liverpool in 1912. I suspect it was kind of a bit of a warning to nationalists in Ireland, if Home Rule comes in, we're going to England. I suspect it was partly political, but maybe not wholly political. They were expanding anyway in the north of England, you know. But Gordon Lambert explained to me that he himself personally, went over to England with all of the export books and handed them over. He said at the worst moment of his life, because he was giving away the whole export business from Jacobs Dublin to Jacobs Liverpool, and they had to let go a huge number of men here. And he said it was the Irish government's fault. There was no need for that embargo. He claimed, I don't know the whole circumstances of it, you know. But a couple of things. I mean, this was now, say, coming up to the early 30s when they kind of lost the export, late 30s.
Well, this would have been after the economic war.
At that time.
But then when it came to the emergency period, of course, biscuits weren't really on the go in those days.
So they must have been a big lull. But they kept going. You know, they kept working. And in fact, the emergency had kind of a strange consequence for one of the. I can't remember now. I think it was George Jacob now, the son of William. I'm not 100% sure now. He had a car, one of the few cars running in Dublin during the emergency, with a big bag full of gas on the roof that they would use. You know, there were quite a number of vehicles with this gas filled. They were using gas to run the cars. But he was coming down Leeson Street one day during the emergency, and he crashed into another car. The corner, he was killed. He was thrown out of the car and he died a few days later, I think. He certainly died of his injuries anyway. No, he could have been quite elderly at that stage. So the emergency, he probably wasn't expecting another car in Dublin at the height of the Second World War. So the poor man died as a result of that accident anyway, you know.
But the
big shake-up came really. A new era dawned when, in the late 1950s, they had a rival for the first. They had competition. Bolan's, an old Dublin firm making bread, originating in Capel Street, then in Ball's Bridge. They began making biscuits. Mm. And even, horror of horrors, cream crackers, you know. And that really shook them up, because they had almost a monopoly, really, you know. So they got into advertising big time. They brought in people like Gordon Lambert was there, but they got into the whole thing of sponsoring their Jacobs program on radio and television, and Aer Lingus. They linked up with Aer Lingus, and they had competition for flights to New York and all this type of thing, you know. And the television awards, the Jacobs Television Awards, so they got into, when RTE started, they got into. And in a way, that was a consequence of having really to advertise big time. A very funny story, you might have heard it already, I don't know, as a result of that, that it was the that Wiltshire man, what's his first name again, that you spoke to?
Neville.
Neville was telling me this. He might have told you as well. He was a rep on the road for Jacobs, you know, and he was there at the time that Boland started. And he said that he was down in Cork, someplace in a small shop. He went into a small shop in Cork shortly after Boland's had arrived. And the shopkeeper said, "You won't believe who was here just before you." He said, "No, no, no." He says, "A rep from Boland's selling biscuits, you know." And you know what he's saying? He's saying, "Look, Jacob says, you don't have to keep those anymore. We've Catholic biscuits now." Because Boland's very Catholic family. So
it just shows you. But Jacobs decided to buy over Boland's then.
They did. And they became Irish Biscuits Limited. But they kept the Boland's name and Boland's brand, you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, that they ran into a bit of trouble over that because at that time, in 60, what was it? I can't remember precise dates. They're in the book there. But they also decided around that time to move from Bishop Street. They were very constrained there. A lot of their workforce had moved out to the suburbs like Ballyfermot and places like that anyway, you know, rehoused. Traffic was getting impossible to deal with, you know, big lorries going into the centre of Dublin. A lot of firms were moving out. Yeah. Guinness is probably one of the few that never did. They decided to open a new greenfield site premises in Talla. And then they took over Boland's, who had a place in, where was it?
Gorman's.
No, Sandy Cove, not Sandy Cove, out that way. Anyway, out near Dunleary. That's where they had their original premises. So at one stage, they were running three sites. They were running the Boland site, they were running the Bishop Street premises, and they were building up Talla, and it nearly broke them. They had to get government intervention there to help them out, you know. And also, there was a bit of a downturn in the Irish economy at the time as well, you know. So they ran into huge problems through their kind of expansion, you know, for a while.
It's an extraordinary story. You obviously got very caught up in it and involved.
I did. No, there was old research now. I haven't looked at this research for a long time, you know.
But was it something that you... Do you feel that it was a project that you that you understood the business and the people?
Well, I think I understood the people maybe better because I had relations working at Jacobs, you know? I mean, they're all passed away since, and I never spoke to them. But as a kid, I mean, I lived in South Dublin. I was only half a mile away from Jacobs.
Yeah.
I knew numerous people, neighbours, but a couple of my relations, usually young women, worked in Jacobs. And what most people remember was the famous broken biscuits that you could get. And there wasn't a weekend, but one of my relations would come home with a few packages of broken biscuits that they'd sell off cheap to the employees, you know, on a Friday. So they'd all come home with these broken. So they were sort of brought up tea and broken biscuits, you know. I understood the type of person who worked in Jacobs very well because my own relations, some of them worked there, you know.
Well, Seamus O'Matthew, listen to hear that was fantastic, and thank you very much indeed for going through this with me and explaining clearly the story of Jacobs.
Thank you very much.